Welcome to the Trade Show Podcast, the home for conversations with global leaders in the trade show and events business. Our show will bring you face to face with experts who speak about the possibilities and trajectories of this $50 billion industry. I'm your host, Shubhanjan Sarkar, founder of PitchLink, the next generation visitor engagement platform, where our mission is to make conversion easy. Welcome to this episode of the Trade Show Podcast. Thank you for listening and your continued feedback. If you have suggestions or you want me to dig in with a specific guest, please write to me at shubhanjan@pitch.link or message me on LinkedIn. Both links available in the show notes. I'm very excited to introduce you to our guest today, Matthew Harris, Senior Managing Partner, Harris Capital and Partners, and a serial technology entrepreneur.
And there was always challenges as a marketer. It's, you know, it's about targeting or getting your message in front of the eyes of those people that you really want to become customers or hear about your brand, or it's about getting those feet that are walking around a trade show or exhibition to come to your booth and talk to you. But here and now, you know, in this world of artificial intelligence and the tool sets that we have available to us, you know, there's a great big discussion going on about AI, but what it all boils down to is, in my opinion, you know, a really fantastic evolution or revolution, depending on how you want to characterize it, to making everybody's job more easy.
Matt Harris is a serial technology entrepreneur with over 23 years of international experience spanning strategic advisory, capital raising, mergers and acquisitions, board advisory, and founder mentorship. An expert in technology, product development, and capital raising, Matt has founded multiple startups, achieved two successful exits, and been part of a NASDAQ listing management team, along with overseeing 10 post-acquisition integrations. He's also the author of several patents. Today, Matt focuses on M&A across the globe, helping founders and entrepreneurs realize their vision and connect with purposeful buyers and investors. His mission is to align founder-led businesses with individuals and organizations that are driven to make an intentional, positive impact on the world. Known for his approachable style and deep industry knowledge, Matt brings clarity, expertise, and a relationship-driven approach to every engagement, ensuring that both sellers and buyers achieve meaningful, long-term success. Now, on to this insightful and engaging episode with Matt Harris. Matthew, welcome to the Trade Show Podcast.
Thank you very much. It's good to be here.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm delighted that that we could make time and we are here today. And especially because, you know, I mentioned to you when we were talking the other day, that when I spoke to Paul and I was trying to tell him that this is what I do as my day job, he said one person you want to talk and learn from is Matthew. Because he knows exactly what you're going to go through and he's going to tell you what you're not going to like to hear about.
It's always a bit of a concern when someone says you've got lots of experience. It could mean something else.
Well, so to start with, tell me a little bit about what you are doing now and then we will segue it into our conversation.
Well, throughout my career, I've been involved in technology as either an entrepreneur starting a company or working for the company who's acquired the business, raising money, been involved in a listing on the NASDAQ. And now at this sort of stage in my career, I'm on the M&A side of growing companies. And we've been setting up a business now for about 6 months with a colleague in the US to help founders access capital. The right. Primary means, or the primary sort of target of what we're doing is purely M&A. So it's the acquiring company or the buyer taking more than 51% control. But as a side hack, my colleague and I are still helping emerging startups and growth businesses, you know, access sort of growth capital as well. So transition from the pitching side to the advisory side.
That sounds very nice. Are you focused by any chance on the event tech space or is it like agnostic?
It's at this stage in our business, it's drawing on your networks. Okay. So it's about ringing and speaking to my competitors, my you know, former colleagues, my friends who I grew up with who have got successful businesses, people who we've met on our 30-year journey, professional journey. And so what that's resulted in recent months is there is an event tech component to it, for sure, but there's also a construction component, people building residential towers, accessing capital. So it's a very diverse sort of mix of things that have been close to me through my career, but also through people that are close to me as a result of relationships that you've established over that career. And that could mean in a different industry.
Sure, sure. Let's start at the very top. What's your worldview about events and its basic efficiency as a marketing channel?
Well, if you're in marketing and events right now, I'd have to say it's extremely exciting. There's Event Tech Live going on at the moment in London, which is quite interesting that we're having this discussion. You know, growing up in the events world, we always talk about engagement, which is the platform I built previously. It's about exhibitor ROI. It's about making the attendees' experience better, and it's about being sustainable and better for the environment and more accessible to those people who can't access information easily, whether that be going to a physical event or accessing the information online. And there was always challenges as a marketer. It's about targeting or getting your message in front of the eyes of those people that you really want to become customers or hear about your brand. Or it's about getting those feet that are walking around a trade show or exhibition to come to your booth and talk to you. But here and now, in this world of artificial intelligence and the tool sets that we have available to us, there's a great big discussion going on about AI, but what it all boils down to is, in my opinion, a really fantastic evolution or revolution, depending on how you want to characterize it, to making everybody's job more easy. In 2025 and beyond, once people start to become familiar with the capabilities of what this impact is on your jobs, on the message that you're trying to get out there, how well you can target that message and get people to come to an event, it's going to be a really interesting year next year from an absolute positive point of view.
Yeah, so there are two very interesting paths I can take from this answer. I would like to go to the AI part of it. I will get there. But before that, I want to just touch upon one thing and I want to know what you think. Understanding ROI in events. I mean, there are many ways people justify. These are the three main components of it that I see or hear. One is you have come here for building a brand and you're not here for selling. So don't try to attribute it to sales numbers end of the event. That's one. Number two, you are here to assure your existing customers and network with them and bond with them so that they continue to remain your customer, but you're not really looking at new revenue from new customers. That's the second one. And the third one is absolutely that you are trying to find new customers. So when you look at it from where you are, what is the sort of breakup between these three motivations in terms of the exhibitors? Is it like equal between the three, or is it something else, or is it brand or company dependent?
Sure. It definitely depends on the industry and the type of event it is. And I would say each of those three examples that you gave have equal importance in terms of considering how an organizer should market their event, but obviously it needs to be in context to what the exhibitor is trying to achieve. If you look at a construction show or a building show where they're selling real estate, those types of shows, it's absolutely 100% about getting as many names into the database as possible, so the marketing machine after the show can target those people to the mailing list. You're not going to sell a 400 square meter apartment or a studio on the exhibition floor, or they might, but that's not the purpose. The purpose is to build a marketing list. Then at the other end of the equation, you'll have an exhibitor who really wants to have conversations with new prospects, and they have a unique product. It could just be one product on the booth. People walk past, it gets their attention, and all of a sudden the exhibitor has got access to people they never thought they could attract, yet they've got the right product at the right time, obviously, to discuss the price point. And on many occasions, we've seen these small exhibitors who are attracting this type of interest will actually get the most leads on the exhibition floor in a 3x3 meter booth or a 10x10 foot booth. Those small exhibitors have actually excelled. But from a branding point of view, you know, that's really about branding reinforcement. And that's historically been only accessible to the big brands who can pay the big dollars to actually have their brand around the exhibition floor. And that's a fact of the world we live in. Organizers need those sponsorship dollars to actually get a return on their investment at the event. And similarly, those big brands want to have their name everywhere, so every eyeball walking around the show actually sees it and that brand is reinforced. So I would say it's equal, depends on what industry, and it depends on what type of company you are.
Fair enough. If you sort of step back from that and try to make a generalized, maybe an overview kind of thing, and you look at a composition of any given event, would you say that about 10% come from the for the brand building part, and I don't know, maybe 30% come for reassuring their existing customers that they're alive and well, and about 60% is trying to get new business? Is that a sort of a?
Again, it depends. I mean, there's one example, one event that we've worked with for a number of years who does it exceptionally well. They sort of divide their exhibition floor up into the startup zone, and then the feature product zone, then the main exhibition floor. And the strategy is to support the big exhibitors who want to bring as many people to their booth to capture leads, to bring as many customers to the booth, to talk about new products that they can upsell, and to sell the biggest sponsorship dollars to them so they can actually get a greater return on the event overall. But in parallel to that, you have these startup zones where, you know, the organizer wants to take an entrepreneur's idea on a journey through a multi-year strategy that's fit for purpose in their budget. And it works really well. These entrepreneurs launch a new product. It's a tiny little box, cardboard box. Then the next year they take a small booth, and then the year after they get a bigger booth. And if everything goes well, and the event supports the exhibitor well, and the product is right, and the customers are interested, in 5 or 7 years, they will be one of those big brands in the middle of the exhibition floor. But I couldn't say that there is a 80-20 rule or a 30-30-30 rule to this type of strategy, because it really comes down to, you know, what the objectives of the show are and how they lay out their floor plan. A good example is a congress. You know, people come to a congress to listen to speakers, to get their professional development points, and the exhibition is a value added tag on to the congress, so that the people who want to pay to promote their products and services have an opportunity to be there. It's a way for organizers to make money. It's a way for attendees to get off their seat listening to someone talk about a topic that they don't like and go and walk on the exhibition floor. There really is a big mix around the world.
Right. And although there is some data which says that 40% of the marketing budgets are spent by companies in trade shows.
Okay.
So what I'm hearing is that there is no clear or defined method of actually figuring out how those dollars are working.
I would say that's a yes and no comment. I think as time passes and as intelligence tools and CRMs become more sophisticated, but at the same time easier to use, I think that statement will become less and less true. You know, one of the big challenges of trade shows historically is being able to access the data. That could either be accessing the data as it's becoming available on the exhibition floor, and or having access to summary reports of exhibitor success. Now, basic rules of business, unfortunately, I suppose, mean that these big exhibitors, they're not going to tell organizers that they had a good show because they want a discount in the year after. But those individual businesses will know particularly if they spent $100,000 or $200,000, even more dollars on the event, they most definitely will be measuring how successful that event was. And that ultimately comes down to understanding, why is the attendee there?
Right.
Many organizers create personas. There's different ones for different stages, but sort of crudely, people are just exploring. Those are there to have conversations. There's those that are there to buy. There's a group of people who just want to get out of the office and have some fun. And then there's some big announcements to be made at these shows, where the big brands, or if two brands are working together, they will use the sort of tailwinds of promotion to leverage that and make a big announcement. But to understand return on investment across the board, you really need to break it down into different groups and from different perspectives. And I really believe that it's, you know, we're moving into an era where the data that we can have access to, which historically has been difficult to get or difficult to understand, or the people reading the data may not have all the data or the tools to be able to understand it correctly. That time's changing. And it's organically changing. But there's still ways to go, but it's going to change pretty quickly next year and the year after for sure.
Yeah, I agree. I also see the danger, and tell me what you think about it. Also, the danger of overload of data and collecting meaningless data and then getting sucked into it.
Yeah, and there are a couple of really good examples of that. Look, you know, there's different drivers for understanding data in different ways. And for decades, event organizers have tried to understand how successful their event is. And it starts with talking to people.
Yeah.
And, you know, the old way of doing it, and it's still practiced in many places today, is, you know, to try and catch and speak to and survey exhibitors as they come out of the venue. And there are some groups out there who really professionalize that activity, because it's, you know, a moment to get people's opinions, but there's obviously always an emotional element to that. Something may have gone wrong recently in their journey, which is sort of clouding their opinion, or they really wanted to make a point and say something negative for the purpose of getting something, you know, addressed in the year after.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's people's actions. And, you know, as we move into the AI world, it really doesn't matter what people say. It has everything to do with what they do.
Yeah.
And if an attendee told the registration form that they were coming to explore the show at large, but if the data that was collected showed them going to one particular exhibitor product and then they liked what they saw, then for the rest of their journey, 6 out of 10 exhibitors that they went with were the same product category as the first one, then the data is telling us that a person is actively looking for a product or service in that market segment, or you could assume is starting their journey on finding a product service to purchase in that category. And so once the systems start to tell us, hey, look at this person, this has been their behavior, we can start to draw conclusions.
Yeah, I agree.
But then actually, sorry, that's a...
No.
I can keep, talk about this for hours.
No. This is interesting. So do continue.
Yeah, I mean, you know, what we were doing before COVID was starting to use predictive technologies before machine learning became generative. And it's really a matter of actually having 3 or 4 data points before you can start to predict what people are going to do next. I mean, the FBI and the CIA, they've had these systems for years, right, where they look at a person, he's done something bad or she's done something bad in the community, and then 2 months later they've done the same thing, and then a month later they've done the same thing. Well, they can almost predict what's going to happen next, right?
Yeah.
It's the same methodology involved in using predictive analytics on the exhibition floor. And if you can convince an attendee to engage with an app, and it's a big if, while they're walking around, and if you can convince a salesperson on an exhibition booth to stop looking at the next person coming to the booth and open up a computer or a tablet or an app to understand who's coming to their booth, then we can actually start to have real targeted messaging. But that does rely on the human instinct to drop what they're doing right now, and apart from walking around the show. So for me, where this type of data is going to become critically important next year is about how we can monetize sponsorship. How can we get those really big sponsorship dollars that people are prepared to spend and get them in front of the people who will consume those ads or messages at the time in their journey that it's most appropriate? A simple example is, rather than having one message on the billboard for the entire event, you know, that message changing depending on what group of people are coming
right
for the theme of the day, whether it's day one, day two, or day three. It's rather simple, but you need the data to do it. And as you said, that data exists, but people aren't leveraging it. But now the platforms are becoming easier to utilize, and they'll utilize the data for you and make decisions for you.
Absolutely. So that's a nice segue to sort of examine what you think AI will be most appropriately used for. I mean, what is being used for is very basic stuff. Mostly, if you look at the AI additions to platforms, this is most about writing a mail and getting some engagement, quote unquote engagement inputs. But still, it's really in the nascent stage. So where do you see this going?
Well, I think the objectives of, if you try and think about, forget about AI as a really powerful technology and acknowledge that the objectives of an event have remained constant. So we have a common denominator of thought process. We have organizers want to get a return on their investment. They want to make a profit. Exhibitors want to get an ROI. Attendees want to find the things that they're interested in. Most organizers in the world are talking about going sustainable and being better for the environment, and the entire event needs to be more accessible to all. They're sort of the pillars of what the ecosystem is trying to achieve. Artificial intelligence is just going to make it easier to do that, because a lot of the heavy lifting is done by the data. And, you know, one of the biggest challenges as an event tech vendor is that there's 5 or 6 or even 10 other event tech vendors at the event trying to get the attention of the organizer. The organizer is getting frustrated because these technologies are either not working together or operating in silos. And then what do you do with all the data that comes in? Well, of course, these artificial intelligence tools make it super easy to start to actually leverage that data and to explain it to someone. And then, of course, there's the issue of privacy and GDPR and those elements. And these tools can absolutely be set up really easily to ensure that those laws and people's expectation of those laws are actually made compliant. So I do feel that we will start to see, we're already starting to see it, but an acceleration of the implementation and usage of artificial intelligence to achieve some of those 5 or 6 goals I just mentioned in the next few years. But to answer your question, what are the issues that are going to arise? Well, people are going to be scared of their jobs. On one hand. On the other hand, people's jobs are going to become more efficient and easy. So, you know, we're at that juncture where, you know, change management practices and holding people's hands and doing things step by step are so important, because the power is there. But, you know, we live in a world where exhibitions and trade shows are a P&L for a single event for a single year, which is basically a small business that pops up and disappears. And decision-making timeframes are very short, but it's like I've always said through my career, we really need to take a 3-year view and implement these tools, these change strategies and these objectives step by step.
It's time for a short break. Stay with us after the break.
But if you really had an event who wanted to be complete customer focused, you could implement, you know, a call center or a business process offshoring facility that doesn't cost much money. All of the answers can be given by a back-end, you know, AI tool to a person, you know, in real time as it's happening. And you've hit many customer service points. You're efficiently answering a question. you're probably increasing the probability that a person will travel internationally to go to the show, and you make everyone feel good.
You are listening to a Bizcast Audio Original. Podcasting is one of the fastest growing content marketing avenues today. We can help you exploit this largely untapped marketing opportunity. We can craft your audio strategy and leverage the wide reach and easy streaming capability that smartphone penetration provides. It is powerful and personal. Talk to us to find out how podcasting can help you build your brand and reach out to target audiences. Welcome back. I'm Shubhanjan Sarkar, your host for the Trade Show podcast and founder of PitchLink, the visitor engagement platform. Let's dive right back into the episode. Where do you see AI will be impacting most in 1 year, in 2 years, and in 3 years? Would you have some thoughts on that?
It depends on if you ask my opinion or you know, where I think it's going to end up. In my opinion, I think in the short term, it's going to make an organizer's ability to analyze the different data sets much more efficient.
Right.
And so for the people who are sitting in the marketing team reading this data, it's here now. You know, you could upload the CSV exports of the different vendors from the trade show into one of the tools that are available now and say, I've received these different data sets. There's obviously, you know, things that don't align, but can you please give me your top 10 takeaways of what this is telling me? And that can be done in 10 minutes.
Yeah.
On the other side, you know, where do I think it's on the other side of the equation? It's a real human impact for the people that are embracing the use of these generative tools. They're going to find that their jobs are making their daily jobs much more easier and much faster. You know, by a multiple of many thousands, it's incredibly different. And for those who don't embrace the technology, then there's going to be fear. And all of those emotional elements will come into the play next year while people test things out, and there will be changes. In 2 years' time, you'll start to see those events really accelerating in how they use these technologies. I think, you know, one of the topics that people talk about now is how can chatbots help people. And because using AI to actually be a Q&A tool, or, you know, it's sort of the low-hanging fruit.
Yeah.
Of demonstrating the capability of technology. But, you know, for example, if you consider an event right now, and I'm Australian, so if I was in Australia and I wanted to ring London to speak to a human being because I couldn't find the answer online about something at the event, I can't do that now.
Yeah.
So that personal touch of feeling like you're speaking to someone doesn't exist. But if you really had an event who wanted to be complete customer focused, you could implement, you know, a call center or a business process offshoring facility that doesn't cost very much money. All of the answers can be given by a back-end, you know, AI tool to a person, you know, in real time as it's happening. And you've hit many customer service points. You're efficiently answering a question. You're probably increasing the probability that a person will travel internationally to go to the show. And you make everyone feel good. And then the ultimate in 3 years for those events who start on that journey now is that you're starting to feel the full impact of these technologies end to end, from the registration process, from the categorization of attendees into a show, from helping exhibitors utilize tools to attract visitors to their booth and the post-show follow-up as a fully integrated an amalgamated facility that where all the data is in a single location where post show and at show that data can be used to improve the next one.
And just to extend that thought a bit, how do you think, I mean, you did mention support, you did mention registration, you did mention a couple of those, but what else do you think the attendees can benefit from exhibitors and organizers integrating AI, whether it's a chatbot or an assistant, whatever you want to call it, definitely not co-pilot, but.
Well, I mean, you touched on one earlier, and that is the creation of marketing materials. God, I mean, if you remember going to a trade show, I don't know, let's say 10 years ago where
sure.
you would say you need a brochure and then you hire someone to write the message and then you have a copywriter check the text and then you hire a designer to design, then it goes to the printer and then you need to ship it or find an expensive printer in the same city that the exhibition is at. I mean, that was stress. That brochure was the most important thing that you could do to, and then you needed to make sure that the on-site operations people had the stand for it to be there. That's all gone. It's completely gone now. Yeah. And, you know, it's there should not be paper on the exhibition floor. Attendees should be able to interact with the exhibitors and exhibitors get their promotion materials to attendees in an electronic format. And that engagement should then be made known to the exhibitors and to the organizer, to the exhibitors through a lead, you get all their details, and to the organizer in an anonymous form so they can make decisions about the success of the show. That's here already. Yeah. And it's been here for 5 years now. Post-COVID, organizers really shut down their investments in event technology and went back to the basic fundamentals of an event, profitability, getting exhibitors to turn up, selling floor space. But now that we move into 2025, that's starting to change again. And so those tools, those event technology companies have invested millions of dollars in leveraging the new tools. And it's literally a different world than it was 2 years ago. So 2025 is about using what's already available.
Fair enough. Let's take a step back from the AI bit and let's talk about the entire landscape. If you remember, we were discussing that we are seeing emergence of lots of end-to-end platforms. And there are, like, if you look at a landscape, whether you look at Julius's or anybody else's or Skift, whatever, if there are 100 products in the event tech landscape, it's sort of there. That's the number I hear. 70% would be trying to do a end-to-end platform. What is your view?
What's my view? It's, I mean, if I was in the procurement office at an event organizer, I would be frustrated. because exactly. There's not hundreds, there's thousands of event technology companies. Yeah. I think I heard a number of about 3,500 4 years ago.
Really?
But it's not all doom and gloom. I mean, you have like 30,000 events around the world each year, and they're made up of all different characters and players. You've got your big multinational trade show organizers who have relationships with one group of suppliers, and they're a group of suppliers who get what it takes to support a very large event where you've got hundreds of thousands of people coming, and the systems and processes allow that to occur easily. Then on the other side of the equation, you could have one, two, or three organizations in the US, for example, industry associations, who have been working with the same vendor for three decades. The business could have been started in the 70s or the 80s as a registration company, and then that's been passed on to the children or the family, and those kids have developed a lead retrieval product, and then that's turned into a housing recommendation product, and then that's turned into the selling sponsorship and value-added services on the exhibition floor. And those relationships between the staff at the event and the founders of the business have gone through the generations, and that's an ecosystem that exists and it works for them and they don't need to change it. But I really think the issue becomes a problem, as you characterized it, when you have a big event. It could be one big event by one industry association, and the possibilities, if you have 50 or 100,000 people coming, if you have 1,000 or 2,000 exhibitors, that's a lot of opinions and a lot of mouths to feed. And that's where the data issues that we talked about really come into the fray or become important, because the possibilities are huge. Either everybody works together or they don't. But, you know, maybe what's behind the question is what's actually happening in the marketplace right now. And you do have a robust industry of consolidation at the moment between the vendors. You know, I won't mention any names, but I was talking to somebody yesterday, and there's 8 companies in their group that's been consolidated over the past few years. And unless you live in that world, you wouldn't have even known it's happened. Or you had 3 big players, all private equity backed last year, joining to create a single brand. Or you have companies who traditionally might have done a lot of the tasks that you're talking about, but have great relationships with senior management within on the event side. So now they're executing a consolidation strategy to have a complete end-to-end approach. But that's the trend right now, to work with a single vendor, to consolidate your data silos, to refine and create efficiencies. And then in 5 years' time, it will do the full cycle. And individual event directors will say, well, actually, my situation's a little bit different. I want this one. Or, you know, it's just part of the cycle right now. But we're definitely not on a path to consolidation that will remain a consolidation where we've only have a couple of big players. It doesn't work like that.
One associated question is, there are plenty of niches around the event tech, the platform bit, which is the central silo, yeah, if I may. Do you see development coming from the needs that exhibitors have or needs that attendees have, which are across exhibitions that they attend or that they participate in? So while the siloed thing works very well for the organizer because it helps them consolidate, it is exactly the opposite for the attendee and the exhibitor, because for every event, they have to have a different app, they have to have a different whatever, right? So yeah. What do you see happening there?
Well, it's funny, actually, you mentioned niche. The events industry is a niche industry in itself and at large, even though it's a, you know, multi-billion dollar industry. The needs and requirements of the industry, just by its very nature, mean that it's a niche industry. If you focus entirely on the needs of an exhibitor, and this is the great challenge, at least as a vendor, is when you're a vendor, an app developer, a QR code deployer, a lead retrieval system, a beacon company, RFID company, you know, those entrepreneurs, they build those products because they really believe it's going to help the exhibitor. And they've done their research, they've spoken to exhibitors, and the needs are different depending on whether you're in India, whether you're in the US, or whether you're in Europe. It's just the nature of the world that we live in. But where do I see each of those sort of falling into helping the exhibitor? I mean, if you had a vendor's way, they would literally go and give their best product to the exhibitor to maximize the capability for the exhibitor to get the lead. But when you look at the overarching umbrella of what's required at an event, when you've got so many feet walking through the venue and so many conflicting requirements and infrastructure issues at the venue or in the country, time to set things up, that it becomes a very different equation. And it's about trying to find a balance between your 1+1. So an exhibitor wants to get a lead and an attendee wants to find an exhibitor selling the product they're interested in, and then giving them the tools that make it more efficient. And the easiest place to look is an app, which exists, be it an event app or a lead retrieval app. But there are many more tools out there that can support that.
Right, right. Do you see any new segments emerging? Apart from AI, I think AI is definitely divided, and a lot of products will come with AI first approach and thereby try to distinguish themselves. But do you see any new niche
emerging in the event tech space?
Well, I think leading with AI is not the most compelling message to get people excited. When you talked about artificial intelligence, you know, 4 years ago or 5 years ago, people were excited by its possibilities, and now it's everywhere. So, you know, if I was a vendor or if I was an organizer, I just wouldn't be. You're right to discount the discussion about AI because it's not what's important. What's important is how you're providing a solution, and how it's the same old thing. You know, how is it going to make the exhibitor's life easier, the attendee's life easier, and how is whatever product you're working with can actually extract knowledge for the organizer to make better decisions next year. I don't see anything groundbreaking that's coming out of the market at the moment. What I do see is those people that have been working with these tools in recent times consolidating their position to use those tools, because next year there are going to be a whole bunch of other new tech providers coming out who are just taking generative AI off the shelf, plugging user experience around it and saying, hey, voila, we're here. And it's going to be a conversation between those incumbents who have been around for 10 years, who've been hard coding their algorithms and getting data sources to work with each other. And then all of a sudden it just miraculously happens with this new tech. So it's a balance between the two.
Lovely. I think we covered a lot of ground. Anything you would like to mention before I sort of bring in your Kondoku? I just want to touch upon it because I know I sort of convinced you to do one more episode with me talking about the Kondoku story, but I would love to touch upon it today. But anything else do you think we should touch upon before we do that?
Yeah, I mean, we talked about event tech, we talked about experiences, and we talked about consolidation or using a small number of suppliers to make the event more efficient. Paraphrasing, but kind of that was the message. And now I'm, you know, on the M&A side, sort of sitting where investment capital sits, and being a person who's raised capital, went through a number of recent companies, I'm starting to see a new world out there, and it's a really refreshing world. Mm-hmm. And so my last message would be to, you know, to any event tech companies that are thinking of raising money, don't think of it from the point of view of this elevator pitch, this walking into a cold room in London or New York or Paris or Milan or Berlin and being scared of the person sitting on the other side of the table. I've actually been really refreshed to have met people, family offices, private equity companies who genuinely want to help startups and growth technology companies access capital to realize a vision. And so one of the things I'm hoping to influence next year is a change in narrative around helping event technology companies access the capital and the resources they need to really grow their business at the speed in which the ideas were generated by the founders, versus having to waste your entire time trying to raise money and then you've lost a whole year and you've probably lost 20% growth in your business. So that's part of what I'm working on now and where I'm going. And I think, you know, if we can connect the right money with the right ideas, then who knows where we're going to end up in 18 months' time.
That sounds fantastic, actually, because not only because you are now sort of prompting me to request you to come for a third episode to talk about that, but more realistically, I think this is something which is critical, because people like you or Marco, who are actually, who understand the space, and then they're moving into the investment side. So actually bridging the gap of knowledge between investors and the tech and the space, I think that is extremely critical for the growth of this industry.
I think so. It's good that things are changing. But thank you for the time. It's very nice talking to you.
But I don't go yet. Let's touch upon the Kondoku journey that you have had. Just talk about what prompted you. I mean, I'm really looking at you to give me a teaser, you know, for the next episode. What prompted you to say that I'm going to spend a decade building this company?
the headline is the event industry, the business model is broken. That's the headline. In the US, you have registration companies who are forced to discount their costs in return for selling lead retrieval products, and then they try to make a profit on by making direct sales to exhibitors. It's completely counterproductive. The organizer gets a cheaper product and the exhibitor has to pay more because the vendor, the registration company, is trying to make their money back. I created Conduco to be the sort of silver bullet between exhibitor value, so getting better leads, by a thesis that if you improve the experience with the attendee, you would increase the amount they interacted. And if when they interacted, they got something of value, i.e. content, that would then create like this domino effect for them to continue to do so. That thesis proved correct. We increased leads by over 1,000% compared to other technologies. And we did it consistently for a decade. But the underpinning stuff that was really exciting was that the organizer finally got access to data that meant something, where they could make real decisions about moving forward. And then by making that data accessible in real time at the exhibition floor, the organizer could deal with spot fires, which always happen. And we achieved that. But, COVID came, Conduco survived COVID, and then coming out the other side, you know, it really became a question of being a 38-year-old person with a big idea who didn't have a care in the world to a 48-year-old man who started to think about retirement when you are, when 50 is looming, which it is this year. And, you know, you've got to make smart decisions about what's realistic. And Conduco came out of COVID and it was a rebuild. We didn't have the tailwinds of virtual events. That's not where our focus was. And some of those companies who did are doing really well. And some of the companies who went all in to virtual events have completely disappeared. So, you know, it's really now about how can I impart my knowledge and experience in something where I can add some value. And on the finance side, it's certainly where I can.
PitchLink makes buying easy by enabling high-quality engagement between buyers and sellers. Through its presentation and discussion modules, sellers create customized sales narratives using sales collaterals and personal videos and reach out to prospects through a non-intrusive, buyer-qualified engagement process. PitchLink requires no installation or download, contains and manages the entire repository of sales collaterals and buyer-seller conversations. Talk to us to know more about how you can engage with customers without interruption. Connect with us on LinkedIn or visit tradeshowengage.com. That is tradeshowengage.com.
Well, Matthew, thank you so much for this conversation. I think we really had a very wide sort of cross-section of views and thoughts and ideas. I'm excited to talk to you about the Conduco story soon.
Yep, sure.
You're not getting off the hook.
No. I've been trying, honestly, because I left Conduco 2 years ago now, almost. Hmm. And it's a story that I'm very happy to talk about because, you know, we did many things right. And Conduco was not Matt Harris. Conduco was a board of directors. It was a board of shareholder-led advisors. It was customers who took a punt on the business model. It was vendors, partners in the Middle East and China who really believed in the story. And there were event organizers who really got behind us. It was a, you know, it was a really good thing. But, you know, I'm very happy to talk about it because in hindsight, winding back 12 years, there are things that maybe, you know, are not so important and that we latched onto that, you know, maybe if it didn't go like that, then it could have produced a different outcome. Or if I was younger, Conduco potentially could still exist right now because there's a lot of willpower. But one thing's for sure that I'm really proud of is that every person that was involved in Conduco, ex-staff, some of with whom I've been working with for 26, 27 years, you know, we all still talk. And it's even today, many years later, we were having calls last week and the week before with some of the ex-team members. And it's a little bit emotional because you're like, oh, shit, you know, that was really nice people and really love working with them. But I have no doubt that within the next 2 years, we will be working together either as a team or supporting each other's different sort of career paths that started to happen. So, you know, it's a small industry, the events world, and once you get stuck in it, you sort of tend to stay. Yeah.
Matthew, thank you so much for joining us today, and I will see you soon again.
Okay, thank you.
We have a fantastic lineup over the next couple of episodes featuring great conversations on engaging your booth visitors and maximizing your ROI from your trade show investments. Subscribe in your favorite podcast app so you do not miss a single episode. Thanks for listening. Thank you for being with us today on the Trade Show Podcast, the podcast of record for the trade show and events industry. Here we talk to movers and shakers of the $50 billion trade show industry and identify ideas, challenges, tactics, and strategies to leverage the first-party intent inherent in the trade show business. We hope this conversation helped inform and motivate as we all navigate a rapidly changing business environment. For us, these are enlightening conversations enriched with knowledge and expertise. We encourage you to go out and implement some of the ideas we discussed today. We hope to have you with us again in the next exciting episode of the Trade Show Podcast. If you liked what you heard, subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast platform like iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcast from, and give us a rating while you are at it. This is a BizCast original podcast and is produced for Pitchlink, the next generation visitor engagement platform, where our mission is to make buying easy. Hosted by Shubhanjan Sarkar and produced by Rajiv Aditya. See you next time and have a wonderful day.